Sinn Féin stand accused of hypocrisy over the party's opposition to the extradition of John Downey. Michelle O'Neill has called it an attempt to overturn due process. The Sinn Féin national chairperson, Declan Kearney, tweeted the hashtag #ReleaseHimNow. But is this hypocritical or legitimate concern about the state's handling of legacy issues? With me this morning, the newsletter's deputy editor, Ben Laurie. Good morning to you, Ben.
Good morning.
Good morning. And the Irish News security correspondent, Alison Morris. Good morning, Alison.
Good morning.
Good morning. When you see, Ben Laurie, Sinn Féin's relentless pursuit for what they would describe as justice around Soldier F, and yet now they do not want to see justice pursued with the same relentless manner with John Downey, what's gone on?
Well, I think in answer to your question, is it hypocrisy? It's hypocrisy on a grand scale. And this will happen, it seems, every time some Republican... We had the arrest of a Republican a few years ago in a very notorious murder, and it was described as political policing. There's huge pressure over this. And there's going to be huge pressure over, I think, any similar Republican cases. And remember what's happened with Soldier F, just to show you how this is not happening in reverse, to show you how serious this situation is. With Soldier F, there have been banners going up. There's great anger across the community that a soldier is facing trial when IRA leaders don't and won't, probably. And there have been politicians who've been outraged and who've spoken publicly about it. But there hasn't been, by, for example, the DUP, a forensic pulling apart of the case, an examination of it, and that kind of thing. And given what's happening on legacy, there's a really, forget Soldier F, not talking about any cases that are coming up, there's a really serious case that unionists should be more involved in talking about what is a crisis on legacy, a really serious crisis. This case, Downey, is one of the small, very small number of Republican major trials, and then there's a number of trials of soldiers coming up.
Alison?
I think legally it's a fascinating case for me as a security journalist. I mean, I'm fascinated as to how the legal process will work in the Downey case, because what we do know is that when he was standing trial for Hyde Park, the judge in that case, Justice Sweeney, said that it was an abusive process for that to continue because he had an OTR letter. Now, that scheme then has since been reviewed, and Lady Hallett said it wasn't to get out of jail free, it wasn't an amnesty, and any future evidence that came to light, those people could be charged. So one judge, one very senior judge in the Old Bailey, has said that that you cannot be trialled if you have one of these letters, and a different judge is going to have to make a different decision. So setting that aside, I think it's fascinating. But what I would agree with Ben in is the legacy process is a complete and utter shambles. You know, some families have a hope, a very distant hope that they might get judicial justice. Some have none at all. And then we have cases like this. And I mean, the Soldier F case being a case in point in those banners, I always think that it's disingenuous to say that that is support for that particular soldier, because there are at this point in time four soldiers facing historic charges and facing court cases. And it doesn't say support our veterans. It doesn't say support, you know, Dennis Hutchings. It doesn't say support Soldier A and B. Soldier F, it's because it's Bloody Sunday and it's such an emotive subject. I think that those banners are being used in a very specific way. When it comes to what Sinn Féin said yesterday in relation to John Downey, they shouldn't be commenting on this case in the way that it is. It's fine to show up in court and support someone, just like it's fine to show up in court and support Soldier F. What you shouldn't be doing is trying to politically interfere with the judicial system, because the OTR scheme and the 2014 scandal, when this came to light, shows that political messing around in the judicial process, it takes away the independence of the judiciary, it takes away the public faith that the judiciary can carry out their duties independently, and we shouldn't be commenting in relation to those cases saying things like, you know, free him now, this is an abusive process. These are completely different charges. He was released on the Hyde Park charge because the judge said his OTR letter amounted to what basically was an amnesty at that time. We've since been told it isn't. Let's see what another judge decides. Another judge will have to say whether that letter counts as an amnesty
or not. But people don't need to know about the intricacies of this case. We do not need to get into the fine detail of this current case, because there's a bigger message here. And the bigger message is that Sinn Féin will pursue and will shout from the rooftops about British soldiers being brought to justice, about British soldiers going through the judicial system. But as soon as it's one of their own, they will shout the opposite. They will shout slogans like, "Release him now." That is from the chairperson, Declan Kearney. Now, how can unionists listen to a message from Sinn Féin, Ben Lawrie, of equality and respect? Where's the equality from Sinn Féin in terms of our judicial system? Where's the respect for our judicial system from Sinn Féin?
Well, I think that there is a perception of this imbalance, this dual approach from Sinn Féin. But remember how we got here. The issue of amnesty, I mean, I remember years ago writing about this when I was at the Belfast Telegraph on Weston Park, 2001, I think it was. It was called Paragraph 20 or something, when it was first floating the idea of on the runs, of amnesties, of that kind of thing. And because that, and at a point, the Ulster Unionists, I think, or elements of the Ulster Unionists consider this, and many people within the Republican movement didn't want an amnesty because they wanted to see soldiers in court. So what Tony Blair did is that he went offline so that nobody knew about the secret scheme. And as Alison says, you know, a judge thought it was valid and then there was a way that it was found not to be valid. So that's how we've ended up in this situation. But if we are, and by the way, as it happens, as a commentator, I never thought that this was a wise way to go, pursuing big prosecutions. But given that we are pursuing big prosecutions, not only is there the imbalance to which you refer about one party talking in this way to seemingly immediately undermine prosecutions, there's a much wider imbalance. I'm reading David Blake Knox at the moment. It's a book about the abduction of Thomas Niedermayer. Thomas Niedermayer's murder was an appalling crime. He was a German industrialist who brought many jobs to West Belfast. And the person who ordered that, there's no doubt about this, is the now dead former IRA commander, Brian Keenan. Keenan. And there, he was never arrested for that. He was never charged with that. He was never charged with being an IRA leader. We've had other IRA Army Council deaths, Billy McKee, Martin McGuinness. None of the people, in fact, Keenan is one of the few people who did serve significant time in England, but nothing commensurate with being an IRA leader. So think about the soldier trials. The soldier trials, I say, without commenting on the details, those are will go before a court and the court will decide. But think about the general principle of soldier trials. These are people who generally were involved in split-second shootings. It might be that by 21st century standards, we consider that the split-second shooting was clearly illegal, but it was a split-second shooting. How does that compare to premeditated murder? How does that compare to not just the terrorists who made one premeditated murder, the terrorists who plotted decades of premeditated murders, of bombs and so on? So not only is there that imbalance, that it seems that IRA leaders just don't face these trials, there's the additional insult of the minute it seems that there is some movement against some Republican terrorists in some cases, there is this reaction from Sinn Féin.
Can I just say, Ben, in relation to that, you've obviously not, I don't know whether you have or not, been watching the BBC Troubles series that's been shown, and you can see that, of course there was imbalance. And in relation to a lot of those killings, whether we talk about the steak knife killings in Operation Canova, or whether you look at, in relation to the Mount Vernon UVF and all of those things, that there was state collusion that has been found by the Ombudsman in relation to those. So, you know, you don't have, you know, this honest broker of the state in between two warring tribes. That is not an accurate reflection of what went on here. But what I do think is that
the collusion is grossly exaggerated.
Well, it's grossly exaggerated or not, it still happened. And if it still happened and that was someone belonging to you who was murdered by someone who was being assisted by the state, Stephen says in that documentary, and he has said it before, that of the 210 loyalists that he arrested to speak to, 208 of them were informers. I mean, that is an astounding figure. Who actually would these people even inform on if every single one of them was an informer working for some branch of the state? So we had a very murky and a very dirty war. We have thousands of unsolved...
Isn't it magnificent that so many people were working as informers within loyalism? This is the misuse of the term informer to imply that there was widespread collusion. This is a separate debate. But here's just a very simple point on collusion. If there was significant collusion, why didn't senior IRA die? If there was significant collusion, why out of 1,100...
Probably just answered your own question by saying
40 of most of their murders were Catholics, shot in the back of the head, and that kind of thing. If there was significant collusion, why didn't senior IRA die? This is all about... I'm not saying you're doing this, Alison. Of course I've been watching the BBC series. Very important journalism. But I'm talking about a wider attempt to imply that the terrorists in the British state were roughly culpable and all about the same, and maybe we should push through an amnesty to stop all this. This is what this is all about.
I just think that we need to have a really honest conversation. I think at this point in time, Sinn Féin need to be honest with the people who vote for them and also with the victims groups that they say they support. Do they support an amnesty? So let's be honest about this. If they think that John Downey shouldn't be prosecuted, does that mean they think there shouldn't be any historical prosecutions ever again? Should we draw a line in it? Let's be honest about it and have an honest conversation about that in relation to, specifically, I think that this is a case that will, I think, be massively important in relation to how we proceed in the future, because it will show what exactly that scheme that Tony Blair came up with means judicially. Does it mean an amnesty? Will a second judge say that those letters amount to an amnesty in bad faith to prosecute someone, or will they be allowed? Because if so, when Lady Hatlett did a review, she found that another three letters had been handed out in Ara. So where are those people?
OK, Alison Morris, thank you very much indeed. That's Alison Morris from the Irish News. Ben Laurie, just before you go this morning, just to get your reaction to our second story of the day, we're asking if Boris Johnson has thrown away another promise to Northern Ireland in his Brexit proposed deal. The BBC understands the UK has dropped a demand that the Brexit deal include a veto for the Stormont Assembly to prevent the arrangements for Northern Ireland ever coming into force. Government sources insist that they are still seeking a mechanism to give the people of Northern Ireland a greater say. But this Stormont veto, as you know, Ben, had reassured some unionists that nothing to Northern Ireland could happen without the consent of a future assembly. And it's Adam Fleming, our Europe correspondent, now understanding Boris Johnson has let that go.
Well, what I would say is this. The short answer is that I don't know. But very clearly, the unionist veto, as it's called, is not going to survive, and the Sinn Féin veto is not going to survive. And what I think is going to come out of this is the maintaining of a role for Stormont. What they're going to do is they're going to say, this is the position, whatever the position, it's X or Y or Z, this is the position, and to change the position, you'll need parallel consent. Now, once you need parallel consent from both communities, we need to be very clear, the position never changes. It just never changes, because there'll never be parallel consent in something like this. So what I think they'll do is they'll have an arrangement such as regulations. We don't exactly know what's going to happen with customs. This is the position that we're aligned with the EU, and the consent, Stormont has to change it. So yes, this is a very serious situation. It's what I was saying in the programme last week about a looming crisis. There's no easy way to resolve what's happening here.
Okay, Ben Laurie, thank you very much.